go to any search engine at all, Bing, Google, I don't care, any search, ask Jeeves about this, Metacrawler it, AltaVista or Lycos it, and type in the phrase, who invented HTML? And you will almost always, without very, very few exceptions, be given the following answer or some variation on it. HTML was invented by Tim Berners-Lee. That's right. It was written by Tim Berners-Lee. It was created by Tim Berners-Lee. It was invented by Tim Berners-Lee. Article after article, encyclopedia entries, and just general overall factoids about it. From here to kingdom come, thousands, nay, millions of entries about how HTML was invented, created, spawned from the brain of Tim Berners-Lee. But here's the funny little secret about that. It is utter hogwash. It is nonsense. It is a myth. It is a myth. It's not real. You know, heresy. Heresy, you proclaim. Everyone knows that Sir Tim Berners-Lee, who was knighted by the Queen and won the Turing Award. He really was knighted by the Queen. He is a knight. In England, created the hypertext markup language. You better have some serious proof to back up such an outlandish claim. Oh my heavens. Okay, challenge accepted. To start with, you know better than to challenge me on this stuff. This is what I do. Let's look at, this is the good place to start. A simple HTML document, right? Let's take a simple HTML document as it would have existed back in those days, the HTML 1.0 or even earlier days, and go from there. This, here it is, right? HTML, it's got the body tag, the H1 and H2, those are different levels of headers, different header sizes. Now, HTML, as you know, has 6 levels of header sizes, a paragraph tag, a list items, you know, the standard stuff you get in just a generic HTML document. Nothing fancy, but wait a second. Now, hold on. I think I accidentally used the wrong screenshot here. That's not HTML at all. What was I thinking? That's SGML, a totally different language used several years before HTML. That's my bad. My bad, everybody. Here, let me show you an actual screenshot of HTML. So here's an actual. Wait a minute. Darn it, I did it again. This time I posted a picture showing HTML next to another sample of SGML of the same document, of how you'd maybe format the same document in HTML and SGML. You know what's funny though? Now that you mention it, they look exactly the same. Like, strangely enough, down to the pixel. That's weird. Huh, how curious. Now, a lot of you are going, okay, Lunduke. What the heck is SGML? I'll tell you. SGML, the standard generalized markup language, also known as ISO 8879, was set as a standard back in 1986, 7 years before the release of the HTML 1.0 specification, and several years before HTML existed as a thing at all. Now, over in Switzerland at CERN, also known as Conseil Européen pour la Recherche Nucléaire, or the European Organization for Nuclear Research, a man named Anders Berglund adopted SGML primarily for usage in formatting documentation. This had been an ongoing project at CERN for some time. They'd use a number of different mechanisms to adequately mark up and standardize on a way of marking up all of their documentation, make it easy to categorize, make it easy to search. It just made things a lot easier across the entire organization. Here is, in fact, a picture of the CERN SGML User's Guide by Anders Berglund from October 27th, 1986. Man, that was a long time ago. So that's just the title page. I linked to this in the article so you can read the whole entire document. Lovingly, CERN still publishes the PDF for this, so you can read the whole gosh darn thing if you want to follow along at home. Now, that variation on SGML, also known as SGML GUID, remained in usage at CERN for several years. And in 1987, the year after that document was written, a man named Tim Berners-Lee was hired as a contractor at CERN, where, wouldn't you know it, part of Tim's job was using that implementation at CERN of SGML GUID, as it was known. Now, a few years later, HTML was born. And just to jog your memory again here, here is that same screenshot I showed up above, right? Here is a simple document marked up in both Tim's, the one on the left, HTML 1.0, and the CERN variant of SGML, SGML GUID, on the right. Now, find the difference here. I dare you, look really hard at the body tag and the header tags and the paragraph and the list. Really hard. Find a single difference. And again, this is not like the only tags that are the same. This is just how it is across HTML when you compare it with HTML GUID. Now, I'm not saying that Sir Tim Berners-Lee directly copied HTML from SGML and the implementation that Anders Berglund made of it. I kind of am. I am saying exactly that. HTML is, without question, a copy. It is a copy of SGML GUID. It simply is. Really big copy. Just a straight up copy. But here's the thing. Because many of you are flipping your tables over and punching your screen, and you've gone to the kitchen, you've grabbed a fork, and you're just digging at your computer because you're just filled with rage right now because this is part of your religion, and I don't know why. But to be fair, this is not entirely fair to Sir Tim because he's a knight, so we have to call him Sir. In defense of Sir Tim, Knight of Her Majesty the Queen, he did do more than simply make a copy of SGML when creating, I put creating in quotes, HTML. And I'm going to list the ways, the things that he did beyond simply copying it. I make myself laugh. In fact, there are three very important changes to SGML that were made by Sir Tim in order to make HTML. And here they are. The first one is obvious. The first one is totally obvious. He added the ahref link tag, right? That's what he'd added that because the href tag, that whole thing, it did not exist in SGML GUID. Everything else, but not that. That was new to the SGML GUID implementation, okay? So that's number one, that's a new thing. Number two, he changed the file extension from .sgml to .html. In fact, if you take a .sgml file, an SGML GUID file, and change it to .html, early HTML parsers written by Tim Berners-Lee parsed it perfectly. I mean, with some exceptions, because it actually took out some features, many, many features. And then there's the third thing. He implemented an SGML parser, which only implemented a little over a dozen tags from SGML and just ignored the rest. And he called it HTML. It's more than just a dozen. I can't remember. It was like 17, something like that. That's what Tim did. That's what he did. And while that item number one up there, the href tag, is a noteworthy change over SGML, specifically SGML GUID, items two and three, which are very real, none of that is a joke. It makes me laugh, but it's not a joke. It's real. Only serve to reinforce the fact that HTML is, for the most part, simply a copy of an existing SGML implementation. And to make matters worse, it is a less functional copy at that. It is essentially a copy of part of it, but not all of it, and then just leaving it at that. As an example, here is the very first HTML document ever written. I'm going to show this to you now, which other than the usage of href, is identical to SGML. This is it. This is real. From December 3rd, 1990, right, before HTML 1.0, when Tim Berners-Lee was just starting to work on all this. This is the very first HTML document that Tim Berners-Lee himself wrote, down to the last little letter. And you'll note that it has, you know, your headers and your lists, but, and other than the href, right? The Anchor href, the Ahref, it is an SGML GUID document perfectly, right? Perfectly. The one thing that changes those hrefs. So you change that href to something which SGML recognizes, such as a different type of anchor tab. Fun tidbit, that A in href stands for anchor. Anchor, hypertext, reference. Ta-da, Ahref. And this instantly becomes a valid SGML document, an SGML GUID document right here, as long as you change that to another type of a tag, another anchor tab, which is totally doable. And those are features that totally existed at the time. But hypertext, that's so important. The linking between things, that's important. I hear you screaming that. He did so much more. He added the hypertext. He added the href. And while the addition of a standardized way of including a simple looking hypertext anchors or links or ahref was a welcome addition to SGML, no doubt about it. That is a much easier way to write an anchor with a hypertext link, which is what those are, than existing anchors at the time. That was, at the time, the only significant change which Sir Tim implemented in his SGML copy known as HTML. Now, as the years have gone on in HTML2 and HTML3 and HTML4, tons of new features have been added, right? I am in no way claiming that SGML GUID is exactly the same as HTML 4.0. It is, however, exactly the same as the first couple releases, the first pre-1.0 and the 1.0 release of HTML that Tim Berners-Lee himself did by himself. It is. Other than, of course, changing the file extension to HTML, of course, that was pretty important. It's really, really ridiculous. Now, back in the late 1980s, people were adding hypertext and linking between documents everywhere. This was happening all over the place. Apple, for example, already had a fully graphical hypertext system known as HyperCard. Here's a screenshot of HyperCard, just for you don't know. Now, HyperCard was more of a local thing, but I just use that as a graphical example. And case in point, nearly every major online service of the day, of the 80s, had some form of linking between documents that wasn't brand new, not in any sense of the word. So with the hypertext hype train fully underway across the entire computing universe, it was only natural that any update to or copy of SGML or SGML GUID would include that functionality in a kind of front and center way, right? So instead of having a cumbersome looking anchor tag, you have an ahref tag, which was simply easier to write. Was it a huge difference? No, but technically it did was a change. Sir Tim Berners-Lee adding href to SGML was important from that standpoint, but otherwise HTML was little more than a direct copy of existing work. And here's the thing, not a bit of this is disputed. These are historical facts that are extremely well documented. The W3C itself agrees with everything I've said above. If you find yourself disagreeing with anything I've said above, you are in disagreement with the W3C itself, who hosts documents talking about the legacy of SGML and how it led to HTML. Interesting, right? So why then? Why, Lunduke, if that's the case, why is it important to talk about any of this? I'll tell you. Because getting history right is important. The ridiculous myth that Tim Berners-Lee invented HTML has been repeated over and over again every single day for decades, resulting in that myth becoming accepted as gospel truth, with awards and acclaim and even a knighthood showered upon Sir Tim in part because of that myth. The work which Tim Berners-Lee did on that initial 1.0 release and all the HTML variants that came before it, to put it bluntly, was trivial. Trivial. At most, bordering on plagiarism. The reality is, Tim stood on the backs of giants. He wasn't simply inspired by others, he directly copied them. To the point where Tim's work is almost indistinguishable. See those screenshots above? I'm going to scroll back up and show them to you again because it's indistinguishable. Look at this. One side is Tim's work, one side is the work of Anders Berglund. Which is which? Can you figure it out? Is it the same screenshot? Do you even know? It's the same. It's the same. From the work he copied, right? It looks the same. And now here's the thing. It is almost always, that HTML work is almost always attributed to Sir Tim Berners-Lee. And that's simply not true. Here are some of the giants he stood on the backs of. Anders Berglund, which we just talked about, and his work on SGML GUID at CERN. He directly copied the work of Anders Berglund. Now, I haven't spoken to Anders. I don't know how Anders feels about any of this. But it's true. But he also stood on the back of Charles Goldfarb, Edward Moschner, and Raymond Loewy, the original creators of GML, the generalized markup language, right? Upon which SGML was based. Note, this is true. GML, generalized markup language. Not quite. It was Goldfarb, Moschner, and Loewy. G, M, and L. It's named after the first letters in their last names. That's true. So HTML, yes, ML stands for markup language, but it became that because Moschner and Loewy. So HTML might as well mean hypertext Moschner and Loewy. That's true. That's a weird roundabout naming thing that is true. And now that's in your head and it'll never leave. There's also Ted Nelson and Douglas Engelbart for their early 1960s work on hypertext. Just as a side note, Douglas Engelbart gets a lot of credit for his HTML discussions of hypertext, not HTML, of his hypertext discussions back in the 1960s in what is often referred to as the mother of all demos. An amazing demo. Definitely watch if you ever have. However, Ted Nelson actually was working on a lot of this before Douglas Engelbart's mother of all demos occurred. So both of them were kind of in tandem in the 1960s, working on much of the same hypertext and hypermedia idea. This was a really common thing, and they are two of the early pioneers of all of that, and then there were many more that came throughout the 1970s and 1980s after that as well. There's so many more. We couldn't list them all, but I wanted to call out those names in particular, because every single one of those names contributed something new and significant to the world of hypertext and markup languages. They blazed new trails. Even Anders Berglund, who did he create SGML or GML or the concept of hypertext? No. He did, however, make specific changes and documentations around what became HTML. So if anyone can rightly, in my mind, claim that they took SGML and turned it into HTML, it's Anders Berglund, not Sir Tim Berners-Lee. Even though Sir Tim Berners-Lee is the one who changed the file extension to make it so. Now, Sir Tim copied the existing SGML, changed the file extension, removed a few features, and added an anchor tag, which was a feature everyone and their dog was doing at the time, and he released it. That's what happened. Now, let's talk for a second about modifying a work versus claiming it as your own. If I, Lunduk, were to, for example, fork the Linux kernel, change one line of code, and release it as not Linux, wink, wink, I can do that. I can absolutely do that. It's an open source project, and I can legally make modifications and release copies. But if I were to then receive near universal acclaim for inventing not Linux, wink, wink, that's a problem, right? Because legality aside, copyright issues aside, that just wouldn't be right or true. I wouldn't have invented it. I changed a line. Likewise, let's say I were to take a copy of the specification for the C programming language, right? I'm like, move aside, all you guys, Dennis, Richie, and everyone else, get out of here. C, take C. And I change one line or add one feature or say change if statements. I change if statements and just make them F statements or off statements. But otherwise, it's the same. It would not be true to say that I invented a new language. I tweaked something that already existed, that somebody else built a little. Thus is the case with Sir Tim and HTML. Sir Tim was Sir Tim. An instrumental figure in computing? Yes, absolutely. You bet. And does he deserve a mention, a prominent mention even, in the history books because of that? Absolutely. He had an impact and some really positive impacts, and he did do other work. But did he invent HTML? No, not by a long shot. And we need to stop repeating that myth. Holy heavens, let's just scroll back up here for a second. This is, in my mind, plagiarism. Except here's the thing. Here's the thing that's really important to bear in mind in all this. Sir Tim Berners-Lee, if you go and ask him about the influence that SGML and SGML GUID had on HTML, I am positive he will tell you, probably honestly, that it had a big influence on it, right? He will tell you that about the history of SGML. If you go look through the archives of documentation, of past PDFs even, of the W3C, of the history of HTML, it includes SGML. They're not denying it, right? This isn't like they're trying to pull a fast one on us. What's happened here, right? Sir Tim's not out there saying, no one made markup before me. He's not even out there saying, no one created these tags before me. But we, tech journalists, average people, developers, computer nerds, everyone else, we've simply attributed to Sir Tim Berners-Lee that he created HTML, and he did not. He did not at all. To attribute it to Sir Tim Berners-Lee is an absolute travesty and an injustice to Anders Berglund and everyone else that came before. It just is. If we wanted to say Anders Berglund created HTML, I'd be like, well, you know, he kind of did. Did Gottlieb and a few others invent HTML? Well, in a roundabout way, sort of, almost. But once they got to SGML GUID at CERN, they were essentially at HTML. Now, SGML is a broad thing. You can create multiple different types of documents in SGML, right? Because it's more of a standardized markup language. And you can create multiple types of documents, and you can have defined types of tags within them, like email addresses or memo fields and all sorts of things as their own individual tags. And that is where SGML GUID really came into play, because it implemented all of those tags that HTML has, including the header tags. How many headers does HTML have? 6. How many header levels does SGML GUID have? 6. How many of it's all the same all the way down. The documents are identical. Tim Berners-Lee was a contractor, a consultant working for CERN, specifically working on stuff where he was exposed to SGML GUID, and then he changed the file extension and he called it his own. Now, I don't know inside Tim Berners-Lee's mind. I don't know if his thought was, I'm going to fool everybody. I don't think so, because I don't think he thought that these HTML files were going to spontaneously become the basis for 90% of commerce and communication in the future. I don't think he was thinking that. Based on every interview I've ever heard from him, I'm pretty sure that's not the case. And the people he was working with, well, they already knew what SGML and SGML GUID was. It was well documented, and they all knew. So what he was doing was essentially creating a minimalist subset of SGML GUID with one or two very tiny tweaks that were kind of versions of things that already existed, and changed the file extension so he could kind of differentiate between it and full SGML files and full SGML GUID files. That's not nefarious, right? I'm not going to attribute malice there to Tim Berners-Lee. I will, however, say that the massive amount of acclaim and awards and praise he gets for creating HTML is a profound disservice to the people who actually created it. Because Sir Tim was simply one person doing a little bit, a very small amount of work around things that already existed. And he got the credit for it, and the other people did not. And that, in my mind, is a travesty, not just for the people who got screwed out of the credit for the hard work that they did in making everything that we're using today. But it's a disservice to all of us because it gets history fundamentally wrong. So, did Sir Tim Berners-Lee invent HTML? No. No, he did not. He copied someone else's work, probably without anyone's objection, and we gave him all the credit for creating all of it. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that this has perpetuated as a myth. It's insane that you go to search engines and say, who created HTML? Tim Berners-Lee. He's a knight. Like, okay, this is insane. And what's really nuts is I wrote this article. I'll put this up. It's referencing material that is not disputed anywhere. I'll put this video up. I'll put this podcast up. I'll power it out to social media. It'll be read by huge numbers of people. And still, this myth will get repeated over and over and over again. Now, the Lunduke Journal, this is something that we do. We bust these myths. And sometimes myths are nefarious, right? Someone trying to take credit for something else. But most of the time, these myths are either misunderstandings or just people just getting it wrong and hearing a lie or a joke repeated so many times that it just becomes assumed as truth. But we still need to bust them just the same so that we know what the actual history of computing is. Was the first bug in software a real moth? No, that was a joke. That was a joke. There's just so many things like that. Was the first computer programmer Lady Ada Lovelace? No, she was not. Not by any measurable way. But that gets repeated so often that people begin to assume that it is true. And people will defend that. In fact, me putting out this out there, I think that more than likely, Tim Berners-Lee is not going to disagree with anything I said here. I don't think that anyone listed will disagree with any of this. I don't think the W3C will disagree with any of this. And yet, I bet you anything, people will be like, you got it wrong, Lunduke. I disagree with that. You're missing key points. I guarantee it. Guarantee it. People get upset because they cling to these myths as though they were their faith, their religion, their core. We got to bust them up. Got to bust up these myths. If you want to support the work of the Lunduke Journal, go to lunduke.com. And that will take you to Lunduke Journal Link Central, which is just a ton of links. Good old-fashioned Ahrefs. Thank you, Tim Berners-Lee, that will take you to all sorts of different places where you can watch all of the Linux Sucks videos and all the other shows that I do, podcast archives and dozens of podcast RSS feeds and me on social media platforms, everything all over the place. And if you scroll down, you'll see how to support the Lunduke Journal. And you go over to how to support the Lunduke Journal, and that link will take you to a beautiful page where you can pitch in and get yourself a subscription, right? A monthly, a yearly, a fancy pants, a lifetime pass, or you can just contribute and you can just toss a little donation in, including via Bitcoin, lots and lots of options. Because at the Lunduke Journal, we don't do ads. We don't do sponsorships from companies. We take no money, not a penny, not a dime, not a nickel, not a farthing from any company, right? IBM comes in and says, Lunduke, here's some cash. I say no. I turn down sponsorships and advertising offers regularly because at the moment I take them, the moment I have to start worrying about what they think. I have to start in the back of my mind thinking, can I talk about that company? If IBM pays me, can I write a series of articles publishing detailed whistleblower exposés on the inner workings of IBM, which I did this last December? No, I can't do that anymore. Not without losing that valuable revenue that I rely on to put food on the table. So what I do is subscriptions from all of you. And you make all of this possible. So if you haven't grabbed your subscription yet, do it now. Do it now. You are what keeps the Lunduke Journal afloat. Tell other people to do it. Go out there, spread the good word of the Lunduke Journal. Tell them about the truth that we push forward in the world. Tell them about the myths that we bust. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, nerds and nerdettes across the inner tubes, I do declare, end broadcast.